www.themouthmagazine.com.
On this edition of The Mouthcast, I'm very pleased to welcome MG Bolter, one of the finest singer-songwriters doing the rounds of the UK at the moment. Matt, welcome to The Mouthcast.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, very well. Glad to be here.
The podcast finally happens. We've been trying to catch up with each other for 2 or 3 weeks, but it's been a really, really busy time for you. There's a lot of dates. There's a lot going on for you.
Yeah. It's I've just been doing a tour. I released an album in January, and I've just been going around the country, and that finished maybe a week ago. So yeah, I've just sort of really come back home for the first time.
Have you managed to decompress yet?
Yeah. I've been fine. In fact, the last gig was a local gig, so it was nice to sort of finish up about 10 minutes from home. Doesn't usually happen like that.
I see my friends to go dancing, to go out dancing alone. For one day the waves will come at once. Brother, take you onwards to where you belong. Every day there's a man at the station. And he stares at God in the branches. Every day he cries. Every day I walk on by, is it not enough to see the face of God? Many have died on the branches of life that I chose to cut off complete. Oh, you see, they hung there tangled up in the hair of other dreams and false memories that I harbored for long, letting each flower in turn, but they were lost and ultimately. These branches and leaves, woods and trees, were my own worst enemy. Trinkets you and I spend our lives searching for. So I'll drink to the days, I'll drink them away. Questions are all that I know. An example I'll make when those mighty waves come forth to carry me home.
I introduced you on stage a few weeks ago, and I had to double check with you, if you remember, right before you went on, because I was about to announce that the album was called The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which is which is a different album.
I do remember that, yeah.
Different album entirely. Yours is
indeed, yeah.
With Wolves, The Lamb Will Lie. Both actually are really great records. Interestingly, yours was recorded over about a year, and mainly in Sheffield.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a lot of friends in Sheffield. I used to live in Sheffield, in fact, but I made a lot of musical friends in Sheffield, and there's a producer there called Andy Bell, and I was working on a record with another Sheffield singer-songwriter called Neil McSweeney. And after that session, Andy Bell sort of said to me, "Oh, Matt, I like some of your songs. I think we could work together." So it naturally came about. We ended up recording most of the record in a place called Stannington,
right,
which is just really on the outskirts of the centre part of Sheffield, in a big farmhouse. And it was wonderful. I'd go up for days at a time, and we'd work on the tracks and get musicians up from various parts of the country to add things onto it.
It's quite a magical place, Sheffield, I think.
Oh, it's amazing. It's such a beautiful city.
I'm glad you mentioned Neil McSweeney, because that gives me the opportunity to exclusively reveal here in this podcast that he'll actually be performing a show in March for The Mouth magazine. He's
fantastic.
He's a major talent.
He is. He's an incredible singer-songwriter. It's strange. I saw him when I was about 19. I saw him supporting another group at the Boardwalk in Sheffield, and which I think's closed down. I heard that they were going to reopen it.
Yeah,
but,
I think it has, yeah.
And I saw him, and then I was playing with an American musician in 2012, and Neil was the support act. And it sort of clicked while we were chatting one night after the show. I suddenly thought, I know you. I've seen you before. I saw you when I was 19. And ever since then, we've had a really sort of close musical relationship.
He put out a single earlier this year with Paul Littlewood, who I'm sure you've also heard of.
Right, yes, yeah.
You've also played with Simon Felice. You played in Simon Felice's band. You were a lap steel player.
I was, yes.
I interviewed him about 3 years ago, and I saw him perform later that same week.
Mm.
Both things, the interview and the performance. Actually, I can't even use the word performance. That doesn't seem the right word, because he's completely immersed in his work.
He's a shaman.
Yeah, like he has to do this. Is it like that for you? Is your work a driver, or do you drive it?
That's a really good question. I think a bit of both. I have to do what I do, and I think most artists, be them musicians or visual artists or whatever medium you work in, I think there's a need to do these things. I think Simon would agree with me. So in a way, I'm driven by the music. I have to write songs. I have to explain things through songs. But sometimes you don't wake up feeling like Paul McCartney every day. So you have to sometimes force those things out. And I think one of the issues of a songwriter is you have to write rubbish songs, and you have to write a lot of dross, I think, before you get to a song you actually like and you want to perform.
So what's your waste pile like?
Massive. Absolutely massive. Yeah, for an album, I'll probably write 20 songs,
right,
and pick the best, and then the others kind of find their way into other things or just get dropped entirely.
With Wolves, the Lamb Will Lie, that's a line from the last song on the record, but the line is actually biblical in origin. So
yeah.
It has quite a deep meaning, I think.
Mm. Yeah, biblical references do pop up quite a lot in my songs. I studied quite a lot of medieval history in my younger years. And obviously the world then was ruled by sort of religious teachings and Bible. And I don't really know where it's come from. I think there's a lot of stuff that can be explained by Bible references. And I think there's a reason those sorts of things, not just Christianity, but Judaism and Islam and things, they've lasted for thousands of years for a reason. I think that's because they speak of the human condition quite succinctly at times. So, yeah, there are a lot of biblical references and various other things in my songs.
Do you have faith? Are you a particularly religious person in that way?
That again, Steve, that's a really interesting question. It's tricky. I think when I was younger, I had faith. I didn't really come from a religious family.
Hmm.
My family aren't religious. But when I was younger, I kind of bought into the idea of Christianity and an afterlife. And I think every human has to think of the afterlife. I mean, that's the ultimate, isn't it? What happens to us when we die? I think as I've got older, I've struggled to align some religious views with how life pans out. So at the moment, I would say that I have faith, but I'm not sure in what. I'm still working it out.
Okay. I was in a record shop on Saturday, just browsing the racks, and this old boy came in, put down his bags of shopping and started talking to the owner of the shop about a David Bowie single that he'd just heard on the radio, Loving the Alien, which begins with references to the Templars and the Saracens.
Mm.
And it clicked for this guy that that song, although it's kind of 30 years old, was actually talking about things hundreds of years before it was recorded and things that are still going on today.
Yeah.
I think religion is at the root of a lot of what goes on, whether we realise that or not.
Yeah, and I think like that there's a really interesting book called The History of Humanity, and it's by a professor of Jerusalem University, and his name escapes me. And I read that book last year, and it was phenomenal because it was sort of saying that, and this isn't a comment on religion per se, but mankind is the only creature on the planet that has fiction, and it's the only way we can cooperate with one another across vast distances and globally and so on and so forth. And I think going to history and religion, you can see that humans are just trying to figure things out, and we use different templates and different thoughts and ideas on how to understand the reason that we're on this planet. And in a very small way, I use my songs to try and do that. And I think what you're saying about that Bowie single is a case in point. You know, things do repeat themselves. History does repeat themselves. It was very interesting. We were just talking very briefly about politics. But I've just finished reading a book about Oliver Cromwell.
Right. Right.
And, you know, the whole issue that they had about shall we get rid of kingship in the UK and in England. And, of course, all the stuff that's going on with Trump and Brexit, you realise that these major political issues have occurred before. And arguably in the past, they've been perhaps more seismic than what we're maybe experiencing now. I don't know. It's a very interesting line of discussion. Yeah.
It does. We won't go too far down that line.
Yeah.
But, it. I don't know. It feels quite seismic to me, but I guess it will feel seismic to anybody in any generation, won't it, when these kind of things happen?
Exactly. Yeah.
My love, she comes and lays me down in the ivy. I cannot close my eyes or ears to the wings beating above. So to be two love trees, seeds apart and bound to leave, we grow together, reaching out for the sun. Freedom is a place for us, so bearing fruit will grow in love, and no storm see, it grows in your heart, the
the song Love Tree is also from the album. I remember that as one of the highlights of your set at the show a few weeks ago. And I also remember a thought, I clearly remember this thought occurring while I was listening to you, and that's that Paul Simon had definitely been an influence on you. You know that feeling you got as a child when your parents dug out that vinyl Simon and Garfunkel best of, the one with the sort of pastel shade photo. I think Paul Simon or maybe Art has got a black and white striped shirt. Feeling that this was a quiet but extremely sacred music. That's the feeling that I got listening to Love Trees, actually, in that gig.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That makes me happy. Do you know, strangely, a few people have mentioned Paul Simon to me, and I am a fan. He's probably not the main he's not my main inspiration. I think he's a fantastic songwriter. Simon Garfunkel as an act I think was absolutely phenomenal. And I suppose I don't think all music has to be loud and dramatic to affect people. And I think there's a lot to be said for quiet and not meditative but thoughtful music as well.
I think quiet also in the way that he looked at the world, you know, they weren't massive statements that he was making, but in their way, their quiet way, they were actually massive statements about the human condition, I think.
Yeah, and again, I think that goes back to what we were saying earlier, in that the little things in all our lives are actually big things, aren't they? They mean a lot to us, and I think really what I try and write in my music is the history of the mundane. I don't lead a bombastic lifestyle, and you know, most of my day, as I'm sure yours is made up of everyday ordinary things, meeting people, connecting with people, and actually there is a lot of beauty and art in actually doing that, seeing into other people's lives that may not necessarily be earth-shattering, but they have that poetry to it.
Yeah, absolutely. You also talked about Neil Young during your set. I guess the people we might call classic artists are very important to you. Mm. Just thinking about the sheer depth of their work, or the amount of it, really, have there been lessons there for you as a writer?
These are good questions, Steve. I think, there are lessons. I mean, I'm a massive fan of Neil Young. I'm a massive fan of Bob Dylan. I think the industry and art has changed to an extent, because I think in the days that people like Neil Young were doing, when they were my age doing their work, they were signed to very major record labels and they could essentially release anything they wanted to because there was a market out there. And I think there's, you know, I always have to fight the tendency to release everything I do. And that's something that Neil Young, I think, would do. He would just release what he's working on at the time.
Yeah.
And probably the lessons I learned from those classic artists is to maybe release the stuff that really hits home and save the stuff that's maybe not so good for other things.
On that pile at the top.
For the lucrative archive market. But I mean, what's great about those artists as well is they followed their muse. And I think there's a lot to be said in just doing what you feel in your heart. And I think as a musician, you have to play what you want. If you're really into acid jazz or bebop, that's really what you should be doing. And if you're into rock and roll, you should be playing rock and roll. I think a lot of musicians try and play a game and release stuff that they think will be popular. But I think if you do that, you're always trying to catch up with what's already happened.
Yeah, you can't second guess other people's taste in that way, really, can you?
Exactly.
So in terms of your own writing then, the spark and the inspiration to write a song, what comes first for you? Is it musical or is it lyrical?
Do you know what? I think it's a real... It depends, and there's a real sort of mixed approach. What I do is I've kept notebooks since 1998. If you ever came and visited me, Steve, I've got a shelf of notebooks.
Right.
I've got about 30, 40 notebooks. And I jot down my thoughts and lyrics and maybe some chords and song ideas. And what happens is I'll get an inspiration for a song. It'll either be, you know, I could be walking down the street and a great lyric comes to me and I think, wow. And from that grows a whole song, or I might be playing around with the guitar, come up with a chord sequence or a riff or something. I think, well, that I really like that. And then what I try and do is I try and marry the lyrics with the music as time progresses. I think one thing I've learned as I've gone on writing music is not to rush it. I think when I was younger, I'd have a great chord sequence and I was like, right, I've got to write this song right now. So I'd write a fairly mediocre song because I wanted to use the chords. Whereas now I might have the chords sitting around for a year, and then I wait until the right words come along to suit that music.
Like a fine whiskey, you let them mature in the cask.
<Yeah. laughs> Well, I hope so.
I've heard you described as living on the Thames Delta, which is a beautiful. Yes. Beautiful thought. To me, it conjures nature, and your music does feel pastoral. Is that important to you and your music? Is it outdoors music or indoors music for you?
That's a really good question. I live just near, or sort of on South End, which is right on the end of the Thames estuary.
Yeah.
So it's built up here. It's suburban, but it's fairly bleak as well. 5 minutes from my house, you've got all the mud flats of the estuary, and you have all the birds. And especially this time of year, it's very foggy. It's very desolate. And that does inspire a mood within my music. And actually, if I was forced to say whether my music is inside or outside, I'd say outside music.
Yeah.
But the environment is very important to what I write. And every song I write, in my mind, I'm inhabiting a space. And I will have a memory of a space, and that will be what inspires the music or the lyrics. So, for example, I've written a song recently about an experience I had. I was on tour, and I was in Berwick-upon-Tweed. And we went out for breakfast, and it was Berwick in like a March morning. So there was no one around. And they've got I think it's called a fun pavilion, and it was empty. And all there was this elderly lady with a big pot of pennies. And she's just pushing these pennies into this slot machine. And it was just a very desolate scene. I'm sure she was very happy and very satisfied and having a whale at the time. But it just seemed there was something that provoked these thoughts in me. And so when I wrote that song, I was in Berwick on that seafront watching this lady. And so, environment is intrinsic, I think, to what I do.
That's such a romantic image.
It was, exactly. And that's the mundane, isn't it? It's just an elderly lady going to the arcades and playing the penny machines when you're in your late 80s or whatever. I mean, will we be doing that? I hope so.
I hope we are. I hope we're doing it together, though, Matt.
Yeah.
We'll have a nice day out in Berwick.
Yeah, too right. Let's do it.
Well, let's round up. What's next for you? What does 2017 have in store?
Yeah, well, I've still got quite a busy 2016. So I play with a folk singer called Emily Portman.
Yeah.
I'm in a band called The Coracle Band, which make music for her tours. So I'm actually on tour in December. I've got 6 dates around the country with her. And then in 2017, my first job is to record an EP. I've got a new EP in the pipeline. I'm working with a fantastic Birmingham-based string quartet called The Throw. And we're going to work on an EP together and see how that fits. And then I've got later 2017 penciled in a new album. And I'm also touring with Neil McSweeney.
Terrific. Okay, Matt, thank you very much for your time.
Great, Steve.
Riding past dead rivers in the night, cracked creek bed, your head on my shoulder, with the wolf the lamb will lie, and no seabirds squawk their stories. I will trade you one of mine, oh, far down in my soul, deep down I feel my bones shake. counterfeit eyes and the words on my tongue do not give forth the thoughts that I have in my mind. And I walk through the garden. Oh, and I will walk to the sea and let the surf spray up and wash me clean, and I will work to let light in.
www.themouthmagazine.com